Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin's City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And a very good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text or WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rates apply. That's 087-179-1032. Lots to talk about as usual, John. The upcoming meteor shower, microwaving on the moon, perhaps. What's happening on Mars? And we'll get through as many items as we can. And a short notice about Irish Astronomy Week, which is coming up next year. More of that anon. But first, we'll start with what to see in the night sky over the coming week.
No, still for a couple of evenings to go yet, and ending on December the 8th. 2 days' time, the International Space Station in our evening skies. Just to get the chance to see that if you can. I don't have the time for this evening or tomorrow, Ben. I don't know whether you
have. I have tomorrow as well. It's coming to the end of a series of passes. I can give you tomorrow's time now, as we missed it this evening. But at between 4:49 p.m., of course, tomorrow evening, for about 6 minutes or so, to 4:55. So that's 11 minutes to 5 tomorrow evening, and 5 to 5 the International Space Station will go over. Not the great path, not the best path, but it's not bad. You should have no difficulty seeing it once it's cleared, of course. It'll be at a maximum altitude of 25 degrees and a maximum magnitude of 1.3 magnitude, yes. And you'll see it skimming just above Saturn at 6 minutes to five. That's 4:54 p.m. And I think you might, if you're a bit further north of Dublin, somewhere north of Dublin here on the island, you might see it actually occult. Saturn. But that's like 1/10 of a second or less. That'll happen. But it'd be nice to see it go. Fly past it. Well. It appeared to fly past it.
Well, that's what it's doing. Now, Mercury and Venus, deep in the bright glow of sunset, very, very difficult to see. If you want to try it, use binoculars about 20 minutes just after sundown and look just barely above the southwest horizon. Venus is the brighter of the two at magnitude -3.9. And Mercury, a few degrees to the left of Venus, is about -0.6. They're both quite bright, but too close to the horizon and very close to that twilighty thing where they just disappear before dark. Mars, on the other hand, magnitude -1.8. It blazes low in the east, northeast, as the star begins to come out. As the stars become to come out, that's the other ones, not the planets. And then gains altitude until culminating nearly overhead in around midnight. I've been watching this, and it is making a difference, and it is creeping around midnight. It's quite high. No missing this. It's outshining even Sirius, which raises at 8 to 9 p.m. And, of course, Mars's fiery yellow-orangey color always helps give it away. It's a great thing to look at. And I've just been binocular watching it over the last few weeks on clear nights, which we've had a few. And not forgetting that Mars is at opposition on the night of December the 7th and 8th, which is tomorrow night. And I think the full moon is tomorrow, is it?
Coming up more in the early hours of Thursday morning. About 4 or 5 a.m. to be precise.
Pretty close to it, and it's going to occult it for much of North America or Western Europe if you're over that direction. Jupiter, on the other hand, blazes white high in the south in the early evening. Fine, fine sight to see. Magnitude -2.6, so it's quite bright. And it's highest in the south, just soon after dark. So look for the great square of Pegasus above Jupiter in the early evening. and to the upright of Jupiter later in the evening. Telescopically, Jupiter is down about 42 arc seconds wide. And that sort of doesn't give away much if you're not into the arc second worldy type persons and measuring sticks. And we're great at just using fingers and fists and arm's length and all that's for giving us the arc seconds wide. So Saturn, we have magnitude plus 0.8, so it's a little bit dim at the moment. It glows in the southeast as twilight fades. Uranus and Neptune, unfortunately, these are the two elusive ones which try to escape only the best of us. And you need a good telescope, really, for this, or a very, very good pair of binoculars. So if you want to go munching round for Uranus and Neptune, 5.7 and 7.9, on the Aquarius Pisces borderish area of the sky, so you've got to Google that a little bit. So that's the planets round up. Like I say, the moon is fullish tomorrow evening, so it's going to dim out. The Gemini meteor shower, which is going to appear in and peak on the 13th and 14th, and this is the strongest meteor shower of the year, but this year it will be spoilt by moonlight as the peak of the 14th around 1 p.m, meaning the night of the 13th is the best evening to watch. So that's what you need to do, is to get out on the evening of the 13th, where you get to see nearly the peak, the moon doesn't rise until 10:30. I did notice this, actually. It was rising late last night, so you get a good chance to see it. So you can see up to 150 Geminids an hour, and they can be seen in good years, but don't expect too many this year because the light of the moon is going to dim it a little bit, but you will get to see a few, so it's well worth lying out in the grass.
if it's not too cold
and wet, and just a lilo is probably the thing to use as well. If you're a great spot watcher, a great red spot watcher on Jupiter, today is the 6th, so you would have missed that at 6:31 this evening. And again, if you want to see it on the 8th at 12:19 a.m, that's just 20 minutes past midnight, so that's a good time. And then I can go into it sort of every 9.5 hours thereabouts. It gives an appearance. It's a fine sight to see as well. We can be lucky or unlucky.
You need a half decent telescope.
Yeah.
Thank you for John. Now, you mentioned the moon. It's practically full at the moment. It's just over 98%. The face that faces us, that part of the moon that we see, you can see just over 98% of it at the moment. You'd be very hard pushed to call it anything other than not to notice that it's a full moon, if you know what I'm trying to say. It's as close to a full moon as damn it. It is currently up, and as I say, it's 98.3% of it we can see at the moment. It will be juiced out just about 11:15 to this evening, when we'll be able to see 98.6% of the side that faces us. And when it sets in the early hours of tomorrow morning, just before 8 a.m. tomorrow, we'll be up to 99.3%. Slowly, we get there towards the full moon. And when it rises tomorrow in the afternoon, it'll be 99.7%. Mm. I mean, that's close to us, damn it. But as we mentioned earlier, the full moon, technically speaking, when you can see 100% of the face, of the side that faces us, that's on Thursday morning at about 4 a.m. And as for the sun, that'll rise tomorrow in Dublin at 8:25 a.m., which is a whole 10 minutes later than a week ago. Local noon is at 12:16 p.m., which is actually 3 minutes later than a week ago. And then the sun sets tomorrow in Dublin, that's Wednesday the 7th, at 7 minutes past four, which is 4 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then from then until 10 to 5, we'll have civil twilight, and from then until 25 to 6 or so, we'll have nautical twilight, and from then until just after 6:15, we'll have astronomical twilight, when nighttime officially begins. All those twilight times are about 2 or 3 minutes later than a week ago. So that means tomorrow there will be 1 minute and 41 seconds less daylight than today, when we have a daylight of 7 hours and 42 minutes, which is a whole 14 minutes less daylight than a week ago. That rate of change is decreasing. as we come up to the winter solstice, which, by the way, is on Wednesday, the 21st of this month. Technically speaking, it's that just before 10 to 10 in the evening, when there will be 7 hours and 30 minutes between the sunrise and the sunset, which is a whole 9.5 hours less than at the summer solstice. By the way, the earliest sunset, although the winter solstice and the shortest day is Wednesday the 21st, the earliest sunset is actually just over a week ago on the 13th of December, when it be the sun will set at 4:06 p.m., which is only about a minute earlier than it's setting at the moment. And the latest sunrise is on December the 30th, when the sun will rise at 8:40 a.m. And say, like, the earliest sunset is about a week's time, when the sun sets about a minute earlier than now. But for those of us who are keeping an eye out, you shall notice, even by the end of the month, on the 30th, the sun set will be a whole 8 minutes later than it is today.
Uh-huh.
That's when the grand, not quite a grand stretch at that stage, but if it's a clear, well, I notice it in the, certainly early January. Well, I'm looking for it, I suppose, and so I notice this little tiny chink of light at 5 o'clock that you wouldn't have seen a month earlier. Yeah. looking forward, to that. Yeah. Speaking of the moon, Artemis on its way back.
Certainly is, and it's remarkable how quickly this has passed. I won't say unnoticed, but certainly in the news world, there was a great fuss about the launch. And then it's due to come back on the 11th, so there'll be a big fuss going on there as well. So it's been doing a few things, going around the moon and taking a few photographs and things like that, and making sure that everything goes to plan. So it's 3 days into its return now at this stage, and it's quite slow, actually, to get back, because it only took 3 days for the Apollo mission, Apollo 11, to get to the moon. So it's going to be quite interesting to make sure everything goes A-OK, but everything seems to have gone fantastically well. The burns and everything they need to do to get it back out of the orbit of the moon and heading back to Earth here. And it's mind-boggling, the calculations that have to be made for this, and the release point exactly to get it to point towards Earth, I suppose, to get back. So we look forward to next week on the 11th, when the Artemis mission returns back here to Earth.
That's 11th is Sunday. And, of course, it went to the moon and beyond. It went. It reached 430,000 kilometers beyond Earth, which is the furthest any spacecraft designed to carry humans has traveled since Apollo 13. I was going to say it beat that by a mile, but a few miles indeed. And of course, one of the big tests when it comes back is this whole uncrewed mission is to test all the systems, and they say it's doing very well. The solar panels have produced more electricity than they had designed or thought it would, and also the amount of power energy that the spacecraft has needed has been less than they've planned or hoped for. So everything is working very well. But one of the big, of course, very important parts is getting it back into the ocean when it splashes down, and the 11 parachutes on it. Must work, of course. Well, I presume there's some redundancy in there if 8 or 9 they get down okay. But there's also one of the big tests is for the heat shield, because it's going to hit the Earth's atmosphere at 4 times the speed of a rifle bullet, and the faster than any of the astronauts that have gone to the moon before or have gone to the International Space Station. So the heat shield is going to have to withstand 3,000 degrees centigrade as it hits the Earth's atmosphere, and it causes all that friction when it hits the atmosphere, and it'll be traveling at 39,500 kilometers per hour. And hopefully it'll all go well, and then Artemis 2, Artemis 2 isn't for another probably 2 years, they're talking about the end of 2024.
And that's providing that they do go for it.
Yes, well, yeah, well, this is working out so far. I don't think there shouldn't. Well, famous last words. There shouldn't be any delays if this is going as well as it is at the moment. And then, of course, Artemis 3, which will return people to the moon, is now, they're now talking about 2025 or maybe 2026.
Or,
well, a year ago or so, we were talking about, oh, they're going to back to the moon in 2024, but it won't be 2024. It'll be 2025 at the earliest. And maybe
still,
we'll 2026.
We'll get to see this eventually.
I hope, in my lifetime.
At
this rate.
We'll get there. Just a word on the Chinese Shenzhou 14 astronauts. They've returned to Earth after helping to build the Chang'e space station. And they handed over control of the space station to the new gang and returned to Earth. So it set down safely after sunset on the Dongfeng land area in the Gobi Desert. And it was on just on Sunday, a couple of days ago, around 7 a.m., which was midday for us, GMT. And that was about 9 hours after undocking from the country's recently completed space station, the Tiangong one as well. So that's interesting news. And one of the astronauts has actually been up there for over 200 days. I can't think what his name was, but it's here somewhere. And if I find it, I'll give it to you. But 200 days for that breaks the record for any of the Chinese up in space on the space station. So that's a good bit of news for them as well. Do you remember the DART impact? Going back to October. This was
on the asteroid?
The double asteroid redirection test, which is known as a DART. Brilliant for thinking up these things. The plan was to impact and see if they could disrupt the orbit of the little moon going round, and the parent rock, if you like. And it did do that. We have confirmation that it took Dimorphos 11 hours and 55 minutes to orbit its larger parent asteroid, Didymos. And since the intentional collision on September the 26th, they have been using telescopes to try and gauge as to exactly how much it would have been put out of orbit. So they've spotted it within a few minutes or so, 11 hours, 55 minutes orbit down to 11 hours and 23 minutes. So it was a success by smashing a small spacecraft into the little moon. So they reckon their calculations could be plus or minus 2 minutes, but that doesn't really matter. And no threat to Earth from this at all. They've gone off in a completely different direction away from Earth. So nothing to worry about there for us here in the near future anyway.
Thank you for that, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and me, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rate supply. That's 087-179-1032. Maybe I should talk about microwaving on the moon, which I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about food either. We're actually talking about microwaving the regolith, which is the sand, the dry, gritty moon dust. And the idea of this is they think they can microwave this to produce, to make, manufacture landing pads on other buildings for astronauts, people when they go there, because it will be cheaper than taking everything there. Apparently it costs over $100,000 to transport 1 kilo of stuff, material, whatever it is, to the moon, which is why they're going to be looking for, which is why they're probably going to the South Pole, where there's water, ice, in the bottom of the craters that are permanently in shadow from the sun. And from the water, you can extract the hydrogen and the oxygen, which would be the fuel to get you back to Earth, and also the oxygen to breathe, and the water itself, of course, which is needed for life. But there are experiments now about microwaving regolith. They have some regolith, and they have this synthetic, what they believe, you know, reconstituted, shall we say, moon dust. And a part of it involves, first of all, getting these type of magnets that you can, basically sweep over the moon dust and get the material, the regolith that has more metals in it as well. And you can use that. And then there's a particular, they're trying different variations of microwaving the dust to make these basically landing pads for the craft. And around them, because when a rocket takes off, it's going to scatter all the dust at colossal speeds and sandblast anyone for miles around, because there's no atmosphere, of course, on the moon to slow it down. So you're going to have to do something about that. You're going to have to be well clear of a rocket taking off from the moon. Remember that, stand well clear from rockets taking off from the moon.
I suppose it's a type of induction, process that would vibrate the molecules and just make it too. Now, just if you want to be reminded of the eclipse over Texas, live from Waco to celebrate the April the 8th, 2024 total solar eclipse that somebody not so far away might be going to.
That's the plan.
Yeah, there we go. Put in the diary April the 8th.
It's a Monday.
Is it a Monday? Okay, I better write this down. And it's going to take, it's a total solar eclipse, and it's going to take place in April 8, 2024. And it's in Texas. It's an ideal location for viewing this rare celestial display. And Lowell Observatory is teaming up with the city of Waco University, and it'll be quite a sight to see. Do you know exactly where you're going to be, or is there a fairly path of totality?
I think it goes right through Dallas, but I've also read that Austin, Texas is a good spot too. But in the weather forecast is, or the climate, I should say, down there, Texas in April is pretty good. They get a lot of cloudless days. Yeah. There's a pretty good chance it'll be clear on the days. No guarantees, of course. Mm-hmm. A slightly better place would be in northern Mexico. But no, I think I'll stay with grand old USA.
So that's a Monday. So possibly on the Tuesday, you and I might be having a little conversation to explain what has happened.
Maybe we do.
There we go.
And hopefully the direct flights to Dallas will be back as well.
Yeah, that'll be
that'll make it even easier for me.
That's number four for you, is that right?
That will be number four.
Eclipse chaser extraordinaire. Big Ben.
Just the easy ones I go to. Yeah, the US and Turkey.
Easy ones, indeed.
France.
Now, space junk is one of those things. There are hundreds of millions of items of human-made debris which are continually circling the Earth. And how they don't hit things up there at the moment with the size that they are. They tend to all go in the same direction, but even so. And that includes broken rocket fuselages, defunct satellites, and fragments from orbit collisions, which we know about as well because some of the satellites have hit each other. And keen to tackle the space junk problem, the Chinese aerospace scientists have managed to use a large sail. This is a thing that they deploy to deorbit spacecraft at the end of their life. So they'll try and guide them back down as well. But it's about 25 square meters when unfolded, which is quite large. And when a spacecraft is decommissioned, the sail on board can be automatically opened. And once deployed, it will increase the effects of air friction, slowing the aircraft in orbit and speeding up its descent into the Earth's atmosphere, where it will burn up. So this is the new technology that brings us back to Earth with space junk, and a great and very welcome way of getting stuff to not linger and linger up there.
Thank you, John. We've had a text in. I think it's Alan, and he said he saw the ISS in County Kildare at 5:40 today. That sounds about right to me, yes. And also, we were talking about Artemis 1, whether it was the furthest human-rated spacecraft travelled, or whether we had this debate last week, whether it was Apollo 13 or Apollo 14, as I read somewhere else. But Alan points out that Apollo 10, with John Young on it, has gone further than that, but not when anybody was aboard. I think it was when it was set adrift. But I thought that was, well, first of all, the bottom part stayed on the moon. And I thought, now I could be wrong, that the the top part where the astronauts are was in lunar orbit and eventually crashed into the lunar surface. But Alan indicates it was set adrift and it's been in solar orbit since 1969 and may be actually have gone further from the moon than Artemis 1.
There you go.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, well, I was intrigued last week by Alan's...
thank you, Alan.
The way he said you could see the silhouette of the International Space Station across the moon. I've been doing a bit of research. I'm trying to find... get my head around the... as to why that would happen. So we'll come back to you on that one as well. It was a bit...
It'd have to be very quick. How long would it take to transit the moon?
I wouldn't say. Not very long, I wouldn't think. Not from here anyway.
A second?
Yeah, so to just see the silhouette crossing the path. So there we go. Can we talk now, just before we go, Ben, about the biggest radio telescope?
Oh, yes,
which
indeed.
Which begins the search for ET signatures.
ET.
ET's signatures, yeah. This is a monster of a telescope. It's a radio telescope, and it's deployed to the Meerkat radio telescope in the remote Karoo region of South Africa. And the new search for the techno-signatures, indicators of technology, which is or has been developed by extraterrestrial intelligence, expands the number of targets searched by a factor of 1,000. So we're getting closer to making contact with something. I don't know what that will be, but Meerkat itself consists of 64 dishes, which can see an area of the sky 50 times bigger than the GBT. Not the GBT. Yeah.
Green Bank Telescope.
That's the very one. I just lost for words there for a moment. So such a large field of view typically contains many stars which are interesting techno signature targets, and it's the new supercomputer which is enabling these scientists to combine signals from the 64 dishes to get the high resolution scans of these targets with excellent sensitivity, all without impacting the research. Now it's in two places as well. It's, yes, you're quite right, it's the Green Bank Telescope and the Parkes Telescope in Australia. I think the Parkes Telescope in Australia was the one that was the link between the Apollo 11 mission as well. When it went into the dark, it went for the dark side and the backside as well. So,
Is that the one where they made the film called The Dish?
The Dish, that was great, and it's well worth a watch as well. So there we go, so... whether the whole thing was true or not, I just do not know. I'm not sure. But it was certainly a well worth film to watch. So there we go. So Meerkat, watch out for that name. And the GBT, which is the Green Bank Telescope in the USA. And the Parkes Telescope in Australia. So you've got... These are... Looking at the pictures of these, they're just like little aerials lying on the ground, pointing at the sky. So what they get out of this is something that we just cannot see through.
Thank you very much for that, John, and thank you, Alan, for your text. I see there's another two in there, but we can't get to them at the moment because we've absolutely run out of time. But thank you very much. Our email address is astronomy@wcdfm.ie. Thanks to John for his latest news items. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 WCDFM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Lynott with Threads. 11 o'clock, it's Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe and his mix of world music. And at midnight till 2 a.m., we have a program called After Hours with Dave Barry and his mix of jazz, blues, and soul until 2 a.m. But please join myself and John at the same time next week when we'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.